Welcome to another episode of Conversations at the Summit, brought to you by Climb UK. On this episode, once a founder, always a founder. Is it in the blood?
I think a lot of AI tools are going to get rid of jobs. And we're trying to do the opposite. We're trying to create an AI platform that creates jobs. For founders, even if you have had a really bad experience and maybe it didn't go so well, I think it's within your blood to try again for sure. I have a very deep personal relationship with the North. This is the place where companies should seriously consider building a business because there's a fantastic ecosystem, it's growing, and there's a great amount of talent here.
Well, joining me is Rishi Kapoor, a founder who built his own company, sold it, and has gone again. He's now co-founder and CEO of North AI. Rishi, the reason I said that is you and I met about a year ago now, and you had sold your first business. And I asked you, will you go again? Absolutely not was the answer. So is being a founder in the blood, do you think?
I think so. Yeah, now I truly believe it is. And I think for founders, even if you have had a really bad experience and maybe it didn't go so well, I think it's within your blood to try again for sure.
So you're a media exec. Media is very much where the passion lies. Where does that come from for you?
So I was always obsessed with going to the cinema, watching films and TV series. And my dad would always take me when I was younger. That was our thing that we did as a family. And when I applied for university, I applied for two courses. One was film studies and one was economics. And I got accepted into both and had a choice to make. And I went to a lecture on film studies. I went to a lecture on economics and I chose the economics route. And so I studied economics.
Why?
And business.
What was it about the lectures?
Well, I felt as though there was more scope for me to add value and build a career within the business side of the film industry. And is what I was more interested in for sure. And there was a small part of me that thought, you know, can I make it as a critically acclaimed Academy Award winning director? Maybe not. I've got more chance of having a corporate career in London. So I went down the safer economics route, which I don't know, maybe had I chosen a different route, my life would have been different.
It's quite a mature decision to make as a young man, that, isn't it? Because at that point you're told to follow your dreams and follow your passion, but it sounded like head ruling heart.
Yeah, I was always trying to be quite sensible when I was younger. I was very driven. I've always been very motivated to make something of myself, for sure. I think when the decision came, I went with my brain. And my heart was, you know, do something creative. And I wanted to be a director. Part of me really wanted to do that. Part of me still wants to do that. But I love what I studied. I love studying. I went to do an MBA after that as well. And the whole journey for me has been incredibly exciting.
And you went into the media industry. Yeah. What was the first role?
I was at Sony Pictures. I worked in distribution. It's funny because when I was first there, the team that was really big was what was called physical distribution, which is DVDs. And now I've not seen a DVD for years. And so the streaming part, the digital, was a lot smaller then than it is now. Now everything is digital. And so that was my first job. I then left to do my MBA and then I went to work for the strategy team at Warner Brothers. And I was there for many years and it was a huge amount of fun.
Big, big corporations.
Yeah.
When you look back and where you are now, what did you learn, do you think, in there?
I learned the discipline of management and working with various stakeholders and how to operationally work within a business very effectively. And I think those lessons really helped me to run a startup effectively as well.
So there you are at Warner Brothers, career on the up and all the rest of it. What was the gap in the market that you saw that made you think I can start my own business and make a go of this?
So I would see a huge amount of great productions that would never get any airtime and wouldn't get distribution and wouldn't get any global reach. And a lot of them would just fall below the radar. And so studios are really good at taking big blockbuster content and selling it to big streaming services where there's mass eyeballs. There's a huge amount of content that sits below the radar and that just doesn't have the opportunity. And these are great, critically acclaimed, amazing productions. And so I thought, why not build the ecosystem and the, and I don't know how I can call it, the scale of a studio for emerging creators and build a technology layer underneath that helps them to monetize, to distribute, and to finance their productions, and use technology to help content creators to get mass audiences. So provide the scale of a studio, but provide it as a technology platform to everyone else. And so in a short space of time, we managed to accumulate around 10,000 different titles and distribute them across 70 different countries in different languages and different formats. We did deals in Japan, in India. And so we proved that there was value. We had a huge roster of content. And for us to basically build the capabilities of a studio and give that as a tool to emerging creators was just a very powerful combination.
An incredible idea, but there are so many stages to that 10,000, yeah, isn't there? Apart from anything, you're not a tech guy. Mm. So you presumably needed to find somebody to build that for you.
Absolutely. One of the disadvantages that I had, there's two mainly. First of all, being a sole founder. I remember someone at Ernst & Young telling me that was almost impossible as a sole founder to raise any money and to build a successful business. And the other one was, as a sole founder who's not technical, it's twice as hard. And so I'd always advise anyone who started a company to start it with a technical team. But, you know, I was lucky. Very shortly after I started the company, I went on a search to find a CTO, and I found two amazing people who are now my co-founders of North AI. And they joined me very, very early on the journey. I made them shareholders. We built it together as a team. And I just met them through very strange means. I put out a post and an application, and I had a flood of different people. And for some reason, I was drawn to these two individuals who had very different backgrounds. And we just got on and we connected very, very quickly. And they've been fantastic. I've been working with them now for 5 years.
Presumably, were they giving up stable jobs to jump into this startup?
Absolutely. I mean, they're both incredibly smart people and they're geniuses, and they could get amazing, maybe I shouldn't say this, but they could definitely get way better paid jobs than working in the startup with far more security. I think the draw for them is excitement. What we built in the last company and what we're building now has always been on that cutting edge of technology. And I think for anyone who's technical, what they want in their life, I believe, is to be building something that is future-facing, that's going to have an impact. And so I think for very ambitious technical people, they want to be able to build something that's quite groundbreaking, that hasn't been done before.
Yeah,
I think a startup is a great place for that, for sure. What it lacks in comfort and corporate
income.
Benefit, yeah, and income is definitely makes up for in excitement.
So you've clearly got an idea. You know what, yeah, you're talking about, given the background that you've come in. But how did you get that first funding as a sole founder?
In the first company, I met an individual who was based in the Northwest. I was doing some consultancy. So I was at Warner Brothers. I was at Warner Brothers as a consultant, by the way. I was there for a number of years, but I was there as a consultant. And I carried on doing consultancy I did some stuff at BBC Worldwide, Disney. And so I was doing some consultancy for some companies, and he was an investor in one of those companies. And so I met him. He also happened to be a film producer on the side and produced films. So I told him about what I was doing, and he saw the problem straight away because he had the same difficulties. So he said, I will invest, and I know some other people that will invest. And so he introduced me to someone who then introduced me to two other people. And so very, very quickly, I had four or five angel investors that grouped together to give me my first check that got me on the road. And then we raised venture capital after that. And then we built.
Often we've talked on this podcast and Climb looks a lot at those first few months of the journey, because it sounds like, yeah, these people came in, gave you checks and off you went.
Yeah.
It's a bit tougher than that, isn't it? Yeah. That process to actually those conversations and having the money in your pocket and then going again.
It is. I think that's probably where my skill set is. I do find those conversations naturally a lot easier than I think some other people do. Because I understand the things that investors want to see in a business. And I understand that in early stage, they're really backing you and the idea. At later stages, they're backing some of the metrics within your business as well. And I also understand that it's a little bit like kissing frogs, right? You're never going to get it right. and your pitch builds over time and to not lose confidence in it. And so for me, one of the biggest wins is the process of investment as well. So there's a lot of admin involved and having everything laid out very quickly so that if an investor shows interest, you follow up straight away with a term sheet and deal terms and you give them a very short amount of time to confirm and then you move on very quickly. And so you hold no prisoners in that conversation because you have to get through people. There's a lot of time wasters out there. And so I was very, very strict in my process of talking to investors and getting deal terms. I'd move on very, very quickly. And my process of doing it, I think, caught attention from people. So we were able to raise venture capital from Silicon Valley whilst being a Manchester-based company that was very rare at the time. It still is rare, I think, as well. I do think it's tough, but I think there's a formula that people can follow that makes it a lot easier.
Is that a formula that do you think is widely known, or is that a formula you sort of found out for yourself?
I found out for myself. I don't think it's widely known. And I think that some of the small things, even like following up and making sure deal terms and your data rooms in a good structure and making investors know that, first of all, they're not the only ones in the conversation and that you have everything laid out and you want to move quickly does escalate and speed up the process. And really for investors, a lot of it is FOMO, right? They don't want to miss out on the opportunity. And so you have to give the impression, and it's true, that startups move fast, they scale quickly, and this is, you can't have conversations with people for several months because it just puts you in a weaker position. So I think founders need to move fast with their business and need to move fast with investment as well.
And as you grew, presumably you've also got a process, the technical side of it, of showing that this platform works, yeah. That the technical side of it is solid. How did you go about that side of it? Well, presumably you're running around getting the money. Are they building this platform to show that it's stable and working?
Yeah, that's the great thing of having a good team and fire fast and hire slow, which is what we've tried to do, find the exact right people. And so they built... My technical team, my CTO now, Oleg, and my chief product officer, Lucas, they are fantastic at what they do. And so I have ultimate trust that what we build together and we deliver is of exceptional standard. And so I don't need to worry about the technology side. What I need to really concern myself with is running an efficient business that's capitally efficient, having the right investors, and making sure that what we're building is truly valuable to the customers that we're building it for.
So how long did you have that business from start to finish? What was the process?
3 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's quick.
Sooner than I thought.
And, yeah. And who did you sell to? Were you looking to sell? Was that always the plan?
So we sold to a company called DMD, the most widely distributed aggregator of content in Latin America, which is a huge streaming market. They're more of a legacy media firm. They'd been going for a lot longer. It's run by a much more senior team. They didn't have any technology within the business. And so we had value both in terms of technology, but also the catalog that we'd built over that time as well. And also the reason why this conversation came up is because we actually had another offer on the table 2 years after we started the business. And that was from a much larger company that's publicly listed. I'm not going to mention names, but it was a much bigger company. And it's a household brand. But the structure of the deal didn't make us comfortable. But it was nice to have an offer on the table. And it was that started the process of figuring out whether now was the right time to be selling and whether there were offers that were too good to be turning down right now. And so it wasn't something we were looking to do. It came out of the blue, the first offer. It's actually the second offer that we took, but it was off the back of that first one.
And it's another thing that we've talked about at Climb of how difficult is that process of selling? Because some people say that process is actually more difficult than the beginning process of getting investment.
Yeah, I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster because there are some weeks where you think it's going to happen. There are weeks that you think it's not going to happen. And you're balancing two things. You're balancing the business and trying to get transaction across. You're also trying to balance cash flow because it's expensive to also sell your business, right? You are spending far more money on lawyers and accountants than you want to. And then you're also trying to balance the team because they have signals that you are looking to sell, and they have questions over their own jobs and their future and the future of the product. And you still got to build, you still got to grow your business. And if the buyer suggests that, thinks that you're not growing your business, they will either try and give you, you know, a less compelling offer. So you've almost got to juggle two things. So it's tough. It's an emotional roller coaster. I remember when the deal went through, you also have that thing of like, what do I do now with my time? And it was a really weird moment in time where I would just like turn up to the office and open my laptop and think, oh, I've got a huge amount to do today, which is nice. But yeah, it's a strange transition from being busy constantly to then not having a huge amount to do.
But you stayed on the board, yeah?
Yeah, I'm on the board. So I see the team every couple months and see how progress is going and help where I can.
And is that something you're really pleased to still be a part of it, or is it quite tricky? And are you still learning from that business?
Absolutely. I love being part of the board because I think working in a corporate career for large organizations, you never get a seat at the table for a very, very long time. You know, I'd have to be in a corporate career for 30, 40 years to be in any position where I'm exposed to the board. Whereas in this company, I'm on the board and I'm part of critical decisions. And that's fantastic to see. It's also good to see how a much more mature business operates. And we were a very immature startup and we had a board, but it wasn't structured as a board should be. And when I had my first board meeting, I was like, God, this is how you run a board. This is impressive, right? And these people, you know, they've been doing it for a long time and they're much more senior team. So I was like, yeah, I love being part of it. And it's always an exciting time to join a board, especially as they're growing really well and seeing how they make decisions and seeing how they operate. It's an experience that I just don't think I would ever have had.
So Rolf Ford, when I met you a year ago and you were not going to go, again, what did you think you were going to do at that point? And why do you think you thought, nah, I don't want to go through this again?
I thought I was going to do some mentorship, become some sort of bastion of startups, like a guru in technology. And that I did a bit of mentorship. I loved it. I still do mentorship. I mentor a few businesses and I love it. That's what I thought I was going to do. I thought I was just going to support, sprinkle some fairy dust on some young entrepreneur and then walk away and pretend like I've added loads of value. But then, you know, I think it was a year and a bit. I was doing a bit of that, doing a bit, not much at all. And we had this idea, which we'd actually formed in the last company. We'd actually built the business plan and thought of this idea in the last company because we saw it as a big problem space. And I couldn't get that out of my head. And I think this is one of the things about entrepreneurial DNA is that you can't let a problem just go unsolved. Even small household problems that I have, I always look at technology to solve it. And so I have about 10 different ideas in my head just from annoying things that I see every day. And you see everything in life as a problem that can be solved by technology. And so that's an annoying thing about being an entrepreneur. And so we had this problem. I couldn't ignore it. I spoke to the team that I'd worked with, who are now my co-founders. I met with them. We had a chat and I was like, let's do it again. Right. I think we should do this. And there was not an ounce of them being reluctant. They were like, yep, I'm ready. Let's do it again. And actually, we had learned so much in our first one that doing the second one, taking those learnings makes things a lot easier.
So explain what North AI is.
So North AI predicts audience behaviors for video content to help content creators maximize the impact of their content. And we do that by using both AI and neuroscience. So we have this really complex model with proprietary data that we've built over the last 10 months that builds on both publicly available data, but also our own data that we take from people, from live audience reactions. And we've built a model that we just patented about 3 weeks ago.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. US, UK and EU patent pending, I should say.
So when you say from a live audience, how are you gathering that? Is it, what are you getting from them?
So we're recruiting people. we get them to watch a huge range of content, and we use neuroscience techniques such as scanners and eye tracking to understand and measure engagement metrics. And then we use that data. We get about 24,000 points of data for every minute that they're watching content. And so it's a huge amount of data. And what do you do with a huge amount of complex data on brain signals and scans and movements, and head movements, everything that's biological, we take a huge amount of data on. How do you then build that into a model, then interpret it, say, okay, this is what makes content engaging. This is how you can improve your content to make it more engaging, whether that's a YouTube video or an advert or a film or TV series or a game. How do you use that information to make things more compelling? And that's where the AI bit comes in. It helps us make sense of the data, it provides recommendations, it learns from that data, it basically learns how humans interact with video content, and then how we can then give that as a tool for creators to make their content far more engaging.
We're all different though, aren't we? We all engage with things in different ways, and we all, you know, some people love horror.
Yeah.
Personally, it doesn't do it for me. You know, so how do you get that nuance?
Yeah, so we're doing a wide range of research across different profiles, across different types of content. We're lucky we've just received 2 grants to extend the research that we've done. We're hopefully going to get our third. We'll find out next week. And so, you know, that will be 5 grants in a row we've received in the field of studying this gap within both neuroscience and AI to build a model that we believe is groundbreaking, pretty compelling.
A lot of people are scared of AI. Yeah. I think particularly doing what I do, you think, I'm just going to get replaced by something that's AI. How can you reassure some people that this is adding value and not detracting?
I think a lot of AI tools are going to get rid of jobs. And we're trying to do the opposite. We're trying to create an AI platform that creates jobs. And why we think our AI is going to create jobs is because it's going to allow creators to build more compelling content, to understand the commercial reach, who their audiences are. That is only going to help them raise more funding for their projects or create more engaging content that's more successful. That's enable them to hire more people, to get more deals. And so we're definitely creating a tool that enhances what they're already doing, makes them 10 times better at what they do, so they can build bigger businesses, create better content, and in the end, ultimately, employ more people. So we are creating an AI technology that's going to create jobs rather than take them away.
Do you think AI is the thing, isn't it, in tech at the moment? I mean, it's everywhere. Is this the future or is this a trend?
I think there have been a few trends that have come and gone, but I do think AI is the future because it's got a real use case. It's how do I interpret huge amounts of information, and how do I then make it into something that's really easy for someone to access? And I've never seen a technology that gets so much adoption so quickly. So, you know, my mum uses AI. She didn't use any other form of technology. And I think the only closest thing that I can compare this to is the iPhone, right? So now everyone has an iPhone, and pretty soon everyone's going to be using AI. So I really don't think it's a question of whether I should use it or I shouldn't. I think it's going to become a household thing, and it's how I use it to my advantage.
One of the other things, I know Gordon Bateman's not with us today. He's on a lot of the other pods, but you know, he's very passionate about the fact that Climb is rooted in the north. Mm-hmm. You know, Climb could be in London. People keep telling him to take it there. It's rooted in the north. You're rooted in the north. How important is that to your identity, I guess, the identity of your companies?
Yeah, I mean, I call my company North AI. Yeah. I'm hugely passionate about the North. I was at South by Southwest talking to Americans about the power of the North and what the North is and the Northern powerhouse. And, you know, we've been fortunate that we've had a lot of regional support. So we've received funding from the Northern Powerhouse Investment Fund for North AI. We received grant funding from the Turing Innovation Catalyst, which is based in the North. We've had funding from the University of Manchester. I have a very deep personal relationship with the North. So when I was 18, I got a scholarship to go to the University of Manchester to study economics, as I mentioned. That meant a huge amount to me to be able to follow my passions and get an amazing education. I then got another scholarship to do an MBA at the Manchester Business School. And then with this business, I've received grant funding, I've received investment, I've received office space and talent, and there really isn't a place that can pick up an 18-year-old and give him education to the highest degree and give him funding for his business and help get me set up and get started. This, the North is giving me so much, so I owe it a lot. And I'm hugely passionate that I think that this is the place where companies should seriously consider building a business, because there's a fantastic ecosystem, it's growing, and there's a great amount of talent here. So I think, you know, even 10 years ago, there was no question when you graduated where to go. Everyone would just go to London. There's this incredible brain drain of exceptionally talented people going to London to build their career. Now, for the first time, I'm seeing people coming out with PhDs and great careers thinking, where should I go? Should it be London, or should I go to Leeds, or should I go to Manchester or Liverpool? Now it's a real question that people ask themselves, and I think that's fantastic.
And do you actually think technology, you know, the Northern Powerhouse was, to a certain extent, it was a sort of political phrase that got bandied about. It's been used, it's been misused, but now seems to actually be doing something as the combined authorities and the mayors and all of that start to work together. And do you think that tech is actually something that it can really sing from the rafters about?
Absolutely. I think the talent's here, the infrastructure's here, and the money's here. I think those are the only fundamentals that a company needs to get started and get growing. And it's got investment, it's got angel investors, it's got grant funding opportunities, it's got funds that focus on the North. It's got the infrastructure here, and there's talent here as well. Those three things, the only things you need really to get started.
And for yourself, how long has North AI been going?
About a year, just less than a year.
So maybe another couple of years you've got with this, if track records.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be done in 24 months, and then I'll be saying to you, I'm never going to do that again.
But you kind of know you will. I mean, are you already now, knowing that's kind of in your back pocket, that you've gone through that journey, are you already looking at the next thing? Not necessarily selling this one, but what the next idea might be?
No, I'm fully focused on this company and building it to something incredibly exciting. This is probably the most excited I've been about technology in general, what we're doing. It truly is groundbreaking. The research we've done has not been done before. I think that's a really rare thing to happen in AI, because a lot of companies are doing AI adjacent startups. But what we're doing is pushing the boundaries of what AI is capable of doing by combining it with something deeply scientific like neuroscience. So incredibly excited to do it. You know, will I be starting another company in 5-10 years time? I'm probably gonna say to you now, no.
But we both know.
And then we both know that, yeah, that I might do, yeah.
Either that, or you might make a movie.
Either that, or I'll actually follow my actual passion of being a director.
I look forward to whatever it is, be it a new company, or the movie. I think the movie could work.
I hope so. Yeah. I've got some ideas there.
Look forward to hearing what they are. Rishi Kapoor, thank you so much for joining us. Join us again for Conversations at the Summit.